Let's sing and swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 23, Internment-itis. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
My opinion is changing about Americans. They live an inconvenient prison life harmoniously and in unity with their leaders, whose organization and executive abilities are marvelous.
With all of these new rules and restrictions, what do you think of Mr. Tomibe now, Ms. McKim?
I still think he's a good man. The new restrictions are coming from Manila.
Anyone can see that Mr. Tomibe's a gentleman.
Oh, hi, Peg.
Any word from Davao about your husband?
No. The kids miss him something awful. You know, Jerry, we were separated when the war broke out.
And now, episode 23.
February 23rd, 1944. Ray's wife is expecting in May, so a friend gave her a baby shower. She got a layette and a crib basket, and a lot of ribbing, seeing as Ray went all over camp bragging about the baby's camp shop conception. The shower was best summed up in Mrs. Greer's verse with her gift.
Roses are red, violets are blue. It can't happen in here. But it happened to you.
February 24, 1944. Because of his position on the executive committee, Carl was able to go to his house in Baguio for the first time in many months. He is broke, and so are many others, but not everyone in here. Yesterday in the kitchen, the huge roasts, meatloafs, hamburgers, and stews on the stove for people who still have the funds to pay for them nearly finished me. The sight and flavor were overpowering. Jerry and I can buy none of it, so we shared Nita's pineapple and coffee with Peg. February 26, 1944. Well, no more Manila Tribune for camp subscribers, alas. Banning newspaper subscriptions hasn't won Mr. Tomibe any popularity contests, but Miss McKim remains a loyal fan. Over the dishpan, she told Peg and me about a side of our commandant we do not see.
Well, I'll give you an example. Mr. Tomibe went to bat for us for the New Year's Eve dancing. General Ko disapproved, but Mr. Tomibe stood his ground and said,
"It is an American custom. They like it. I say, let them have it."
Really? No kidding.
He's been very open with me. He was embarrassed to talk about it, but a Filipina doctor came to him desperate for sanitary supplies. He said that being a man, he had given it no thought, but told the doctor that he would do everything he could to help.
Do you think he can get some for us?
I asked.
If he does, I'll start a fan club.
Well, a lot of us have stopped. Dr. Mather told me it's because of poor nutrition.
More like starving, if you ask me.
Could you pass me that dry towel, Peg? Thanks. You know, Tomibe-san puts a lot of thought behind his actions.
He does seem to be open-minded.
He is. Lately, we've been comparing notes about language and customs. He told me that he had to clear up a misunderstanding between a Filipino and a Japanese soldier in town. When the soldier asked the Filipino if he'd completed a task, the Filipino said yes using slang, but the Japanese soldier took it to mean something different.
もちろんです、マキムさん。 フィリピン人が言った日本語の意味は、私はあなたを見下している。あなたは私より下だ、だと分かっているでしょう。
Of course, Miss McKim. You know that in Japanese, what the Filipino said means, I am looking down on you. You are beneath me.
なるほど。その後はどうなったんですか?
I see the problem. What happened?
The soldiers struck the Filipino, and the battle of complete misunderstanding was on. You can easily imagine the bewilderment in the Filipino's mind. He'd just agreed to the soldier's order and was beaten. I was called in to unravel the situation and learned a great deal about the damage that can result from differences in languages and customs.
I've seen similar situations here in camp.But they've never turned physical.
I am glad to hear that. But they can still cause resentment and more misunderstanding.
Well, that's certainly true.
I find Americans and your customs interesting. If we had leaders who'd give us a chance to learn and express our interests and desires, I believe the Japanese people would make a good democracy.
If you want to get to know Americans better, Tomibe-san, perhaps you might consider dining with us sometime.
February 28, 1944. At breakfast, Mr. Tomibe stood at the end of the last line as John dished out lumpy, poorly cooked rice, served with hot tea. No sugar this morning. Mr. Tomibe ate a little of the rice and enjoyed the tea. He asked if there wasn't soup or sugar or something to go on the rice, and the answer was negative. He shook his head and said, "Sa," looking as though he agreed with Miss McKim, and went off to think.February 29, 1944. People are starting to sell the clothes off their backs to people in town to get money for food. Betty says my Filipino friend Marie sold some clothes for her and sent in over 200 pesos. She told Betty that velvets are popular right now for making evening slippers. 6 days ago, Jerry sent out his watch to raise money to buy eggs for me and meat for the kids. We have so few possessions left.That it hurt me to have him do it, but as the Japanese say, shikata ga nai. There is no help for it. Nothing can be done. I think I'm going to send out the word for Nita to sell my red, purple, and wine-colored velvets, but not my black one. I'm sentimental about that Singapore dress. Maybe we will eat my clothes yet. We need the cash, and haven't heard a word about Jerry's watch.March 2nd, 1944. It looks like Miss McKim was right. Mr. Tomibe might be trying to make life more bearable for us. A few days after his rice and tea breakfast, Mr. Tomibe asked Miss McKim what we would have had at this meal in normal times. She told him fruit, cereal with milk and sugar, eggs and bacon or ham, or hotcakes, or toast and butter, coffee with milk and sugar.He said nothing and went away in deep thought. March 3rd, 1944. Just when we thought that things might be improving, Mr. Tomibe did an about-face and ordered that roll call be taken twice a day. March 4th, 1944. I took a long walk beyond the goat pens with Peg and her children.We enjoyed pushing through dewy weeds and bushes, which were cool and delightful. We heard the roar of planes over the coast and could see a crowd of people down in one of the villages in Trinidad Valley and our wood crew working up on the hillside. There's a big executive committee meeting going on today, but I haven't heard what it's about. Probably food. Mr. Tomibe and Sergeant Sato are attending.
Our supply of rice and cabbage is sufficient at the moment, Tomibe-san, but we don't have enough sugar, salt, and fat.
Unfortunately, Chairman Carl, I do not think the Imperial Army will increase rations. However, your committee may write a request, and I will discuss the matter on my next trip to Manila.
We'd appreciate that, Tomibe-san.
Please understand that this is a difficult request.Doctors in the Japanese army say internees are getting adequate food for working people.
if we may, Tomibe-san?
Of course, Doctor. Please do.
The people here are not fit young workers. We have an aging population that came here with pre-existing health problems that have been exacerbated by the limited diet.
And if I may, Tomibi-san, most working people have not been exposed to multiple bouts of dysentery.
And a lot of these people have developed digestive issues because of it.
They can't handle the cabbage.
You see, the kitchen used to puree sweet potatoes for them.
Makimu-san, puree?
ピューレ状にされたご飯です.
Oh, 裏ごしですか?
はい.
I understand, doctor. What are you feeding patients to replace the cabbage?
Well, all we have left is rice, but there aren't enough nutrients in it. People are contracting sprue, beriberi, scurvy.
And if we have another round of dysentery, which we probably will, the population with digestive issues will increase.
Makimu-san, 現場は英語で何と言いますか?
Ledger, Tomibe-san.
Do you keep a ledger of your food expenses?
Yes, we do. As you know, before the army started supplying food, we got an allowance from the Japanese Bureau of External Affairs.
Yes, I am well aware of that. What percentage of the kitchen's food did the Bureau pay for?
About 60%.
Where did you get the remaining 40%?
Us? I mean, the internees. Everyone paid a monthly fee, which we gave to the kitchen to buy food in bulk.
Does the camp continue to pay into this fund?
Yes, but as you know, food prices have skyrocketed. Increased. And people are running out of money. We're down to about 3,800 pesos a month for 500 people. So we really depend on getting bags of food from friends and relatives in town.
How much did you collect in the past?
Oh, gee, let's see. When we were first interned, about 4,000 pesos a month. But with food scarcities and inflation, that 4,000 pesos is probably worth 1,000 pesos now. And I'm probably being conservative. We used to get 2 dozen eggs for 80 centavos. Now they're 70 centavos each.
I see. Unfortunately, I am not allowed to let prisoners receive packages from the outside. But I will ask Sergeant Sato to buy sweet potatoes for the kitchen and do all I can to help the camp store to get food.
Thank you, Tomibe-san. But you see, people are running out of money to buy at the camp store.
I don't understand. Wasn't your chef selling roasted meat the other day?
Yes, but very few of us can afford to buy meat. You see, people are selling their clothes to buy money for food. Is there any way we could establish a regular channel for loans?
I will talk to General Ko about these matters when I go to Manila. 750 pesos is going to be used to purchase white bread and fabric, but it could be used for food instead. However, cloth might not be available in the future. You may prefer the cloth.
May we have time to consider?
Yes. I think that the answer to your problem is growing your own food. They are doing this successfully at Santo Tomas.
We've tried gardens before, and they've been moderately successful. And as you know, we have some livestock.
The Japanese army is very in favor of farming, and will purchase chickens and pigs for you to raise.
March 5th, 1944. The money for Jerry's watch came in. Jerry says that if he feels like 2 eggs, he's going to have them. Which is no end of relief to me. It was no fun for June and me to eat eggs while Jerry's face grew gaunt with self-denial. Now we'll all have eggs and beef and carrots. As long as the bracelet, hour and minute hands, and watch case last.
Camp Holmes Daily News. In case you didn't see it this morning, the following announcement was posted on the bulletin board. By written permission from the Commandant, those wishing to marry may do so. It also said that men and women are now allowed to co-mingle at mealtimes in the dining room.
March 6, 1944. We heard today that families are going to be allowed to live together. And Wilma and Clifford are getting married. With the camp all aflutter over romance and nuptials, people's reaction to Mr. Tomibe's family unit plan has been surprising. It is the first normal thinking that has been put up to us, and we can't take it. In the rice room, in the kitchen, the battle rages. People thinking only of sex and modesty are scandalized, horrified, aghast. After 2 years of Nipponese oppression in sex matters, we seem to have developed a large crop of inhibitions. Some of the comments around camp are just unbelievable, and everyone has an opinion, one way or the other.
It's animalism. Just pure animalism.
It's wonderful.
Honestly, it has reached the point where if you want a family life, you're immoral, and if you don't want it, you don't love your husband.
Gee, I expected to see all married couples rush into each other's arms. I would if I were married.
Are you kidding? I don't want to see any more of my husband than I have to.
If my Walter was here, we'd sign up.
I don't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night to take care of a baby.
Well, I can't blame people who are against it. They're terrified of having more children.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm not married. Does that mean I have to give up my space?
What's the big deal? Couples who don't want to live together can go on as usual.
I see no need to keep married couples apart. This could be settled quite sensibly and reasonably. Curtains could be used, or men can dress at one time and women another. At night, when one couple went off to play bridge, for example, the other pair could spend the evening in the cubicle.
I can't even get halfway through a meal without quarreling, so why ask for more of it?
Well, it's real obvious who's happily married and who isn't, and those that don't know it.
You know, all of the friction and bitterness might not be worth it, considering the short time we have left in here.
Can you believe it? Delia opposes the family project.
That's rich. She gets to see her husband at the hospital all the time.
She'd change her tune if she had to live like the rest of us.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Arthur likes living dangerously.
Oh yeah? How's that?
He's going around saying that it's too late in the game to change things now.
With a family plan?
Yeah.
Really? Well, he better keep his big bazoo shut, or he'll lose his happy home living with his family in the women's barracks.
I'm for it, but can see the other side of the argument. Men can stand living among men, but not mixed. I can see where it would be like living in a Pullman car.
Too much emphasis is put on the sex end of it. What about companionship and help that a father can give?
Well, those who don't like much sex are obvious. To some, concentration has been surcease, a relief from all this and its connected worries. The chief point against families living together has been the great chance of pregnancies in time of war and scarcity. However, it is no different from outside. The same means and ways of getting around difficulties or prohibitions will be worked out. Some say that permission to marry and Clifford and Wilma's wedding have started all this. Ray's wife thinks her baby arriving in May is the cause. I think it's normal and healthy and should have been started long ago. God deliver me from privileged people and smug mid-Victorians, uncongenial marriages, and some who don't even know what the score is. The family unit has been the basis for thousands of years. And those who want to live in a unit should be able to do so, regardless of bachelor opinions or comforts. March 9, 1944. I came home from rice picking and heard excited shouts coming from the women's barracks. Oh, good news, at last!
Hey, everyone! Hey, everyone! Shh.
They just brought in a bag of letters from home!
Hey!
Art's taken a bunch of letters to the hospital, and Cleo got 20!
Like a wave, it swept over camp, and excitement mounted with people asking, "Did you get a letter? Did you hear from home?" I hardly dared to hope, having heard no mention of one for us. I went off to wash dishes, looking at groups crouched with smiles over sheets of paper, laughter and squeals of joy in every direction. But when I returned, Jerry came up the front steps with his hands behind him and a big grin.
Guess which hand?
Oh, you'd better not be teasing me because I don't think I can bear it.
Go on, pick a hand.
This one?
Here you go.
I immediately saw Mother's firm, big, black writing, as bold as ever. Her letter was postmarked August 1943, 7 months ago. She's still going strong at 88. Her letter ended with, "Everyone sends love. God bless you all, Mother." Oh, what a difference that single sheet of paper makes to us. At the top of the letter is the telephone number they have had for 20 years. Columbia, 0603. There is still Boston and stability for us. How difficult it will be to tell them all we have been through. We read the letter over and over on the front porch, trying to draw more news out of it. There is such restraint, yet telling much if one reads between the lines. Though we've said little, we all know that Jerry feels very low because of no word from his mother. Peg feels the same way about Walter.
Did you get a letter, Peg?
No, nothing from Manila.
I'm so sorry. It must have been just international mail.
I don't know if Walter's dead or alive, Natalie.
Don't even think that way.
Well, I haven't heard anything since I talked with Mr. Matsumoto last April. Oh, God, Natalie, do you think they've shipped him to a military prison camp?
No, he's a civilian. I bet he's waiting his turn to come up here.
But who knows when that's going to be?
March 10, 1944. The camp news says only 35 couples in the entire camp, including us, signed up for the family unit plan. After reviling the Nipponese for 2 years for not allowing families to live together, we turn it down. No one wants to move an inch of cubicle space. Oh no, not for a little thing like companionship and family life. They don't want to legalize sex and married life. They prefer it furtive and hidden in the bushes or back rooms. Ugh. Jerry and I commiserated over coffee.
I have half a cup of coffee left over from this morning. You want to split it, Natalie?
I'd prefer something a little stronger, Jerry. Did you know that we are the oldest couple who signed up for family units?
Before all of this happened? That would have surprised me, but not now.
What is wrong with these people?
Internmentitis. Living in an internment camp has rotted their brains, and I've got proof. Did you know that we are unpatriotic?
Huh?
Some people are saying that if you're in favor of the family plan, you're unpatriotic. Can you beat that?
Oh, how did they come to that conclusion, pray tell?
U.S. soldiers aren't with their families, so we shouldn't be either.
Oh, dear Lord. Oh. Well, then, by that logic, everyone at home is unpatriotic because all they wrote about was marriages and babies, babies, babies.
Maybe the Japanese are right when they say we've gone soft and are degenerate.
Ugh, this is embarrassing.
It's pathetic.
And Mr. Tomibi seems so human about married life.
Yeah, evidently more than us.
He must think we're crazy.
I would if I were him. Some guy in the barracks opined last night that family living will be too inconvenient for him. It's a hell of a lot more inconvenient for families that have to run back and forth between the men's and women's barracks.
I know. The way Beatty's split between us, we may as well be divorced. And I don't care what you say. As far as discipline goes, he's playing one of us off the other to be with those friends of his I'm not too wild about.
Ah, he's 13. You gotta give him some freedom. He is jealous of June living with you.
Really? Well, he hates to miss anything and is always trying to be in two places at once. He wanted to stay longer with me last night, but I had to send him back to the men's barracks for roll call.
Hell of a way to raise kids. You know, I'm getting mighty tired of people looking down their noses at us like we're immoral or oversexed for wanting to be together.
I am proud that we want to live together with our children.
March 12, 1944. Yesterday, a woman who has been against family living asked me if I've ever taken a walk up in the hills. I said that I have, and find it worthwhile because it gives me perspective. Whenever I go up the hill, I am impressed each time with the magnificent imperturbability of the mountains. How little effect any national invasion has had upon them, whether it was Spanish, American, or Nipponese. Only people are troubled, not the mountains at all. When I told her that Scott and Isabel got a permit to go up on the hill for the day and came back with eyes shining, cleared minds, tired and sunburnt, but radiant, she said,
Maybe you're right.
This morning, I heard that she and her husband went up the hill, and when they returned, signed up for family units. Oh, it's become a camp joke. Maybe the mountains told her something after all. Well, like it or not, ready or not, family units are moving forward. Partitions are being built for those who want to live together. For furniture, every other paling has been taken out of the stairways and replaced with a long, horizontal strip of bamboo to keep the kids from falling through. They are now used for table legs, with Red Cross packing cases for tops. Camp's new garden is moving forward as well. Mr. Tomibe sent a group of our men down to the nearby Trinidad Valley to survey the plot of land that the Japanese have allocated for us.
Hey guys, how'd the reconnaissance trip to Trinidad Valley go?
Not so good, Jerry. The Japanese picked a crummy plot for a garden.
Yeah, Carl's right. It's going to need a whole lot of work before we can get any food out of it.
The dirt's rock hard. There's no way we can plant anything without a tractor. And we're going to need a water pump and some fencing.
Maybe they'll give us some leftover barbed wire after they fence off the camp.
I don't think the effort's going to be worth it. Even if the soil was good, the plot's not big enough to feed the camp.
So what are you going to do? Mr. Tomibe seems pretty gung-ho about a camp garden.
Well, I think we owe it to him to put in an effort and give it a try.
It's going to be a backbuster without farm tools.
Then the committee will put in a request for them.
Mr. Tomibe's a reasonable guy, but his boss isn't going to like hearing that.
No, he's not.
March 13, 1944. Dottie came hurrying into the dorm looking for Peg. The Japanese had just dropped off Peg's husband, Walter, at the guardhouse. There was no notice, nothing from Manila. But who cares? Oh, finally, finally, after being separated since the beginning of the war, my dear friend has her husband back.
Millie, where's Peg? Have y'all seen her?
I think she's at the women's stove, Dottie.
I just came from there. I think she took her kids outside to play.
What's this?
No, I didn't. Someone looking for me.
Peg, it's your husband. He just came into camp.
Oh, Peg.
You're kidding! No, they just
dropped him off.
I can't believe it. Oh, he's finally here, Peg.
How wonderful.
Where's Daddy, Mommy?
Where is he, Daddy?
By the guardhouse last time I saw him.
Come on, kiddos. Let's go see your daddy.
Man, oh man, do you look good.
Oh,
Daddy!
Walter.
Daddy! Daddy!
Say, oh, who are these kids, Peg?
They've grown, haven't they?
Come here, you two.
I love you, Daddy.
I love you, Daddy.
Hey, where's Kurt?
Oh, he must have hid behind the pig pens. He said he was going to do that when you came back.
Oh, still our shy guy.
He's just overwhelmed, honey.
Tell you what, I'm gonna go look for him.
Can we go too, Daddy?
Me too, me too.
No, I think I better go get him myself.
Oh.
Me too.
Oh, it'll just take a sec. Come on, give me a big old hug and smooch, huh? Hey, that means you too, Mom. Come here.
Walter.
Oh, man, I've missed that. I'll be back in 2 shakes with Kurt. Stay there. We got all the time in the world now.
It was wonderful to see them all united after nearly 2.5 years. Wife with husband, children with father, irrepressibly smiling from ear to ear. The entire camp was made happy by their happiness, even couples who don't want to live together. Jerry says that he hopes it'll cure their internment-itis and knock some sense into them.
This concludes episode 23. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.